This podcast is brought to you by Pride NZ and Rainbow Youth.
So I'm really excited now because Benji has just walked in. We're now in Wellington and Benji is just about to complete Q12, the tour, in 2012. And Benji, what is Q12, the tour?
Q12, the tour. How can I say this? Q12 Tour is a tour, or is a project where I go around the North Island interviewing all the LGBTIQ communities about realization, coming out, relationships, socializing, bringing up stories, etc., etc., etc. And it's about finding those voices that wanted to be spoken out, and also it also helps for research as well.
So when you say around the North Island, what centres did you visit?
I started off in Wellington for Ahui, and then I went back to Auckland. Plus, we had the project for Q12 before Q12 the tour came. And then I went to Hamilton, Rotorua, New Plymouth, Whanganui, Masterton, Palmy, and Fielding as well on the side trip. Where else? And also Napier, and now I'm back in Wellington.
And in that time, how many people did you speak to?
I think I was counting on my way here. I think there was like, there was 27 males, 17 females, and I think there was a few of them that were transgender.
That amount of people, I mean, that must be quite a rare event to actually go and be able to talk to 50 young people about being LGBTI in New Zealand in 2012. How easy was it to find that many people?
Well, all the other, most of, it depends on the centres actually, because some centres like Palmy was quite easy. There's people, I had lots of friends in Palmy and they were like, oh, yay, so enthusiastic. They want to get their voices heard and woo. And like some others weren't because they don't have a group, or their groups is, breaking down slowly because it's a new group, but they haven't been taught leadership, how to sustain the group. And some places, aren't, they're very conservative, I think it's called. Yeah, the communities are very conservative and not very open to the idea of sexuality.
So how did you make initial contact with people?
Facebook was a big help, but I got Rainbow Youth to help me a lot. Like, they got me in touch with some people in Wellington for the Hui. And then I started, like, adding people on Facebook and adding groups on Facebook. And eventually the word got out there, hey, Q12 is coming to this place. In fact, in Whanganui, the closet space for Whanganui, the person who facilitates there made it a big deal on the Facebook page, like, wow, Q12 is coming to Whanganui. You must come to this group this week because this is so amazing, like, wow, kind of thing.
That must have been quite neat to have that level of kind of enthusiasm.
Yeah, I felt like a rock star. I did not expect it whatsoever. I didn't expect Palmy to get so many, like 14 interviews in Palmy and like 7 interviews in Whanganui. So it was amazing.
What kind of age range were you interviewing?
18. Well, my age range, I put it on for 18 to 27 generally.
And the majority of people, where did they kind of fall on that?
20, they're in the early 20s. The early 20s are very social, so they really, yeah. However, I did got a lot of 18-year-olds as well.
How did you find talking to people of that age group? Because you're, what, about 20 now as well, so you're basically doing kind of peer-to-peer interviewing.
Well, it was quite easy, really, because I'm a very people person. I talk to everybody. It wasn't really much of a difficulty. I mean, there was the occasional person that didn't like to talk, and I practically had to beat the answers out of them and, like, kept on asking. I kept on asking extra questions so I can, like, extend the interviews to what I felt like was a good time. for an interview. But for me, it was actually a good, it was quite easy for me to actually talk to people.
You mentioned the term LGBTI, and I'm wondering, was there much difference around the North Island in terms of how people identify themselves? Because I'm thinking they could use the term queer or gay. How was that? How did you find that?
It was quite interesting because they were quite happy about identifying themselves as queer. And I've heard one of the interviews, there was someone who was demisexual, and they said that demisexual is kind of like asexual in a way, but it's not at the same time. Like, demisexual is you won't have sex with someone until you feel like you have made a strong emotional bond with them, so to go over that boundary of having a sexual connection with them, which could be either post-marriage or not. Yeah. And they were quite open about how they identify themselves in a sexuality type way, but at the same time, they didn't like to be putting their a label on themselves. Yeah.
What do you think has been the hardest part of doing the tour?
Sleeping. It's very tiring, the tour, because my main job of the tour is actually getting the name out there and like hanging out with the groups and the people around them. So sometimes I'd wake up at 6 a.m. just to plan out, schedule my day, get some interviews done, people showing me around this place, and then get more interviews done, and then go back home late at night and do some editing, and probably won't go to sleep till 12 o'clock. So it was that's probably the hardest thing for me.
In terms of the amount of time it took and what you were actually doing on the tour, is it what you expected it would be?
No. No, I didn't expect it to be so tiring, but I actually loved every minute of it. I loved the travelling as well, because I've never travelled around New Zealand like this before. And I've never seen so much scenery before, so they always say that New Zealand's such a beautiful country. But I never actually expected that it was this beautiful, especially going on the buses. And I didn't expect it being, like I said, I didn't expect it being tiring, but I guess that comes with the program, really. If you're tired, that means you've been working hard, so, yeah.
You say that it was, you know, physically demanding, physically tiring. What about psychologically tiring? I'm thinking that if you were talking with 50 people and almost taking on board their stories, what was that like?
Funny enough, it was actually quite easy for me. I was expecting it would actually be emotionally tiring, but I had a lot of support, so it wasn't a problem for me. Like, I always had people there just in case. Like, I had Rainbow Youth's chaplain, Lisa, mum, my adopted dad, and my boyfriend as well, if I ever wanted to, you know, talk on Facebook. But I never came to the point when I went, oh my God, I'm stressed because I'm listening to everybody else, why about me, kind of thing. But no, I was all fine and happy, and I was excited being around new people every day.
Were there any kind of reoccurring issues that came up in the interviews, kind of independently of kind of what you were asking? Did you notice any kind of themes coming out?
Actually, yes. I think the biggest thing I've actually learned was actually in my last question, when I actually asked, have you ever experienced or received any abuse or abusive behaviour because of your gender identity or sexuality? And the majority, they've practically said, on average, they say that they've gone a lot of verbal abuse, and the people who have been physically abused say that that the verbal abuse affected them more than the physical abuse. And it actually painted a picture that, that verbally it affects you more than a punch or being beaten up, because I guess emotions is more of a emotions or the more in the mind has actually is more of their life than the faces on the outside kind of thing.
Were there any other surprises?
There was always a surprise, but I don't know. I mean, when someone said demisexual, that was a bit of a surprise for me. But I think when I was in New Plymouth, I did an interview that lasted 38 minutes. That was when I realised that, I think that was the biggest surprise. Yeah. I think another surprise was in Palmy. I was interviewing a guy, and there was some, when I asked that question, some people, he told me that some people were actually outside his garage door once, banging on the door just because they knew that two gay people lived in that house. And then they went away and came back with more people to do that. Yeah. I think that was the biggest surprise.
What about funny moments?
Oh, there's plenty of funny moments. That's my personality. I'm very all over the place. So, and that's the same with my emotions at times. But when I'm very, when I'm having funny moments, I have funny moments. Especially with, one of the interviews in, Hamilton. It was the most hilarious interview ever because we went off, started talking about how would Lady Gaga collaborate with 30 Seconds to Mars. In mid-interview. I think I even started singing Closer to the Edge of Glory. There's the new song.
Hey, so you've actually sent me your question list. And I was wondering, would you like me to ask you the same questions?
Yes. I was waiting for this. Go ahead.
Well, I might skip the first one, which was, hello, how are you today? Well, maybe not. How are you today?
I'm tired. I'm actually good. I'm glad that I'm happy that I'm very excited for the tour. I'm very excited that it's almost over at the same time. But I'm excited about the outcome, what's going to come after the tour.
Could you tell me a little bit about yourself?
I'm a fun, bubbly person. Like I said before, I'm a bit everywhere, so is my emotions, but in a good way. I'm a happy person. I'm a very outgoing person. I've lived in Auckland, New Zealand, the whole of my life, born and bred there and raised. And I always forget how people always answer this question. So I always do the same thing. What would you like to know? I'm into pop rock type music. I used to go to radio school and graduated, this is how I got my experience with doing the whole Q12 tour. And I'm currently working at Civic Theatre and I'm loving it. Next year I'll be going to AUT for events management, Bachelor of Events Management, which is a 3-year course, so yeah.
What gender do you identify with?
Male. But, male.
And sexuality?
Gay. Very fabulously gay.
This is an interesting question that you've written down here. How do you express yourself?
There is a reason why I wrote that down. When I was at the Hoi, it's actually opened my eyes because there's the thing how there's a chart. They draw a chart for us. How sex, gender identity, sexuality, and expression is completely different things. But at the same time, they all work around each other. It creates a picture for yourself, and it tells you what you are, in what kind of way. But a lot of people, when I actually ask that question, people, they're very hesitant of answering it, but at the same time, they weren't. Because when they, a couple of people thought that I was asking them to label themselves, and I was like, which there's probably one thing I should have explained a bit more before I answered did the interview. But yeah, for me, how I express myself, last year I used to be a transvestite, which is a gay, could be straight or gay person dressed up in girl clothes with and wear makeup or no makeup, but not in a drag queen type way. Yeah. But I guess I'm in between masculine and feminine. I'm like, I'm actually opening a door, but I haven't actually walked through yet. My arm is through there, but not really, kind of thing. Yeah.
So you're an open door.
Yeah, I'm an open door. That's how I express myself, an open door.
So when did you realise you were gay?
Oh, the magical moment. I guess I realised it when I was 8, because I guess I went through puberty quite young as a child. I mean, I started getting erections at the age of 8, and so I started having feelings for people, but I went through a big denial phase that lasted about, I can't even remember, about 7-8 years before accepting it. But I realized, especially when everybody was like, there was one girl in class and everybody was like, wow, she's amazing. And like, I used to lie to myself to say that, but in secret I had a big crush on my best friend. However, I kept on battling myself, which is quite unheard of, really, because I was at the age of 8. It was like 1998, even before that, 2000, yeah, which is like before we had civil union, which was in 2004. So, I went through a big denial period, and when I turned 13, I was like, oh, I must be bi, because I was still lying to myself. I have to be attracted to girls because everybody else is. Until this one time when I was experimenting with my friend. As you do.
So at the age of 13, what was going through your head in terms of your thinking that you might be bisexual?
Well, I definitely knew I had attractions to guys, and like, but I just couldn't accept myself for being gay at that point, because I kept lying to myself, I have to have attractions to girls, because this is the normal thing to do, as I thought. I went to like a very homophobic school, and I had to keep a secret to myself, because they used to be beaten, gay people used to be beaten up and ridiculed, and all the gay people just kept it to themselves and stuff. But that was in high school. In intermediate school, I was still learning about sexuality, so I don't know. I just thought, I don't know, I could be. But yeah, when I was in high school, I was like, I'm bi, I can't be gay yet, or something like that.
So what kind of abuse would gay people get around 2006, you know, the kind of language?
Well, I went to Westlake Boys High School. I'm not scared of saying that name, because at that time, Westlake Boys High School had the reputation of being Homo Hill, and saying that everybody that comes out of there is gay. And that's from all the other schools saying that to them. And the best way that the students cope at that school was to be a homophobic, to try and get rid of that reputation. So they're incredibly homophobic. Like, not the teachers or anything like that. However, I've found out recently the teachers, that school does not allow any diversity groups, because they said, oh, that's where all the gay kids will hang out and people will start being mean to them. And like, we don't allow religious groups either, because of the same reason. And I found out legally they're not allowed to do that. So, yeah. Anyway, they used to like throw stuff at the gay kids and stuff like that. The teachers always supported sexuality, especially because there was the hot teacher and all the guys were staring at her ass and I was the only one doing the work. And she was like, and she went up to me and once and said, "Ben, you're gay, aren't you?" And I was like, "I'm not entirely sure yet." "How would you know?" And she said, "Well, the others are staring at my ass. You're the only one that's actually gotten a mirror to my class." So, yeah.
And so when somebody actually kind of, I'm not sure if the words confronts you with that, saying, "You're gay, aren't you?" What does that do to you?
Immediately, you'll put up your own psychological protector barrier type thing, and you go like, "What the fuck," kind of thing. But of course, it's my teacher, and I knew that there's confidentiality over it, blah 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 blah. And well, I just had to say yes, kind of thing. But I wasn't at that time. I still wasn't sure, so I said I wasn't sure.
So when did you become sure?
When I was 17. My coming out story is when I became sure was when I came out, which is the next question, as I remember. My coming out story was quite interesting. In 2008, I came out to my mother through a text message saying that I was bi because my sister kind of manipulated me in doing so, which got that out of the way. But I kind of had a plan, like, because exactly on the same day, a year later, I didn't actually realise, but I was actually saying to people that I'm gay, and I didn't actually realise until I came to my mother, when she came to me and was like, "You've been telling people that you're gay. Are you gay?" I was like, "Yes, I am gay." And then that's when I actually clicked that I was actually gay. It was interesting because when I actually realised that I was gay and accepted it, was the same moment where I actually came out to my mother. So,
and what happened?
Well, she took 3 months to like go, "Oh my god, my son's gay," and she had to get used to the fact that her son's going to start wearing makeup now. But after the 3 months, she was fine with it. She's super supportive, like. I've got my adopted dad, who's like my father figure type thing. He's gay and he lives in my garage. We like recreated the garage so he can actually live in there. And my mum has a t-shirt that says, "I love my gay son." And on the back has a rainbow flag.
Just rewind a wee bit. So you're saying that you've got an adoptive dad who lives in your garage?
It's complicated. I met him at... when I was in radio school, and he was like 45, and he became the father figure because my biological dad and my mum got divorced when I was like around 5, and my dad lives in Sydney. And even though my biological dad was there until I was 16, I didn't have a father figure in my life throughout. And I kind of resented my dad for a while. I kind of, in a little bit, in a way, I could say that I actually hated him for a bit. And then I think recently I've kind of gotten over that. But mainly it's because he's now in a different side of the world. He lives in Sydney now, and he's traveling Athens, I think, Europe or something like that. And I kind of had to accept it. I accepted it, and that's who he is, and stuff like that. Anyway, me and Carl got closer, and he just became the father figure of my life. And eventually, he needed a place to stay, and I said, "Hey, Mum." He met Mum a couple of times and said, "Well, Carl needs a place to stay. Can we put him in the garage?" Because he loves living in garages because it's like his own place, it's like his own home. So we rebuilt the garage into a rumpus room type thing, and he lives in there.
What was the reaction like from other people, maybe the extended family and friends, to you coming out?
Oh, funny story. My brother, before I came out to him, he was quite homophobic, but I think that was him trying to connect with me in a way to try to be funny, because that's his way of doing things. He wanted to be funny and connect with me. And then I came out to him, and he said, I don't care if you're gay, straight, bi, male, female, if you vote for Labour, because it's very much of a national voter, if you vote for Labour, Green, or anything like that, just as long as you don't play Xbox, you're still my brother. He's very anti-Xbox. My sister, her reaction was like, oh, gay, another black sheep in the family. And I was like, yeah, right, I'm more of the rainbow one, I'm more brighter than you. And my grandparents, it took me a year for me to, after I came out, to actually come out to them. Which was because I was very scared to tell them. But I actually said, okay, I don't want to tell them, Mum. I don't want to tell them. You have to tell them. And she did for me. And it was quite funny. Mum said, I wasn't there, but she told me, saying that I've got something to tell you. And she said, what, Ben's gay? It's like, yes, he is. Oh, I've known that for years. It was quite funny. However, I think they've realised it, they've accepted it, but occasionally they get uncomfortable with it. Because, like, I've only met one of my boyfriends, and he was a very touchy-feely type guy. He kept on touching my hair, like, grooming me and stuff like that. And my grandparents said to Mum behind my back, saying, oh, he just kept on touching me. He should keep his hands to himself. Which I found it quite funny. My cousins, I don't know. I don't know. They've assumed, so... Yeah. And my friends, when I first came out to my friends, they thought that this is a general reaction back in 2010, when I was coming out. The general reaction was, if you come out through a text message, they think that it was just being someone has hacked your phone. And then it was quite funny, because then they came to me and said, oh, we thought, at first we thought it was that, but then more people started talking about, and then people just started to realize that you're actually gay. I was like, yes. but they all accepted it. And I think the biggest thing was, is that one of my friends was very religious and very homophobic. And he said, and the biggest thing was, well, we don't talk much now, but it was kind of like a big, oh my God moment. So he came to me and said, oh, I found out that you came out of the closet. Well, at least you're out now and you're true to yourself and you're true to everybody else. Which to me, that was him accepting it. So, yeah.
And how did it change you?
Well, before I came out, I was very hidden to myself. I had scruffy clothes. I was very chubby, and I didn't have, I guess I was still finding myself in a way. And well, after I came out of the closet, I just styled myself up. I just came out of the closet with good style, changed my hair, straightened it practically every day. And I was glamorous. Every footstep I took, Glitch Trail was following, I guess. And then I started getting camper, because that's at the time I thought that was how I was supposed to be, but then I become me. So, yeah.
Do you think it's easier now with so much kind of queerness in kind of media and people quite openly talking about, you know, gay, lesbian, transgender amongst, you know, friends and workmates? Is it easier now to come out, do you think?
Well, I don't know. I wasn't very involved. It's quite strange, because I wasn't very involved with the gay community at all until late 2010, when I first went to Rainbow Youth in October 2010. And then I started going to groups until then. So I don't know if I can actually answer that question, because people, I've noticed when I was on tour, a lot of people, even when they're not even out, they involve the gay community, and which made it easier for them. I guess these days it is easier to come out than it was back when I was, because I had no knowledge of the gay community at all. So now it's a bit more open these days, and yeah.
What prompted you to go to somewhere like Rainbow Youth?
A friend on Bebo. Bebo was the big thing in 2009, 2010, and then Facebook came along. But it was a friend on Bebo, I think it was some random, was like, come on, I need to take you to Rainbow Youth. It wasn't even a group or anything, it was just into the drop-in centre so I can, you know, say like, hi, I'm Ben, la da 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 da, kind of thing. And yeah.
Had you experienced an environment where there were just lots of gay people before?
No, it was the big, when I first went into an LGBT group, I was like, hey, I know you, I don't know the rest of you. I was like, well, back, this was when we were in a coffee shop, so it was a little bit more open and everything like that, but which has changed now. Everything's more, they have their own centre, well, not their own centre, but they have a little venue for themselves. But it didn't actually become a bit of a shock for me. I just fit right in. So, yeah.
Can you recall how you felt just walking in there for the first time?
I was very nervous going into like the drop-in centre for the first time, because I used to like go like walking up and down K Road. It's like, oh, I want to go in there, but I can't. So I just bugger off somewhere else. And then someone just like practically pushed me through the door. So I was very scared, but then when I got through, I was fitting in. So yeah, there's the psychological door that I couldn't get through. Yeah.
What do you think organisations like Rainbow Youth, what value do they have for LGBTI youth?
They have big value, because I guess about Rainbow Youth, we wouldn't have a way to connect with each other. And I guess that's one thing that we all underestimate, especially when we're much older, because we forget about how we came together. Well, how I came together with the group, with the gay community, and that was with Rainbow Youth. And Rainbow Youth is actually great value, because they do bring the gay community together, or the young gay community together. It's like the introduction into the gay community.
I find it quite interesting when you were talking before about your adoptive dad, and how there's that kind of intergenerational thing going on. And I wonder, I mean, is there, you know, in your experience, has there been much of that where, you know, you've actually interacted with across generations in the kind of queer community?
Well, my adopted dad was the first step into the meeting older people who are more mature than me to actually talk about what happened in, like, pre-law reform with the underground and stuff like that. So, and that kind of, after meeting Carl, it was more of a big eye-opener, because I was starting to learn more things about gay history, because I was clueless about the gay history until I met Carl. And, well, things kept on, I kept on, like, learning about things that happened in the past, and, yeah. And I think it's good to, because he was became a good mentor for me as well as a father figure.
Speaking of relationships, I'm moving on to the next questions on your list. And I'm just wondering, so the next question you have is all about relationships. And I'm wondering, you know, have you ever been in a relationship before, and when was that?
Fuck. I've been in many relationships. There's a thing, late in tour, I've kind of actually, I had to reword the question from how many relationships you've been in and how many flings you've been in, because a lot of people kept on changing, kept on having different opinions on relationships. And when I changed the question, everybody agreed with it. So, well, actually, it was unanimous how I actually changed the questions and they agreed with me. How there's a difference between a relationship where it's fully serious and there's a fling, which a fling would probably be less than a month, and a relationship is fully over a month. So I guess when it comes to flings, I've been in, I 13, 12 flings, and I've been in 4 relationships. Yeah. My longest relationship was 6 months on and off, which was like, it was like on and off, and then there was a full, another, and 2 relationships were like 4 months. One of them was on and off, one was completely 4 months, and one, another one was like 2 months, I think. And then the rest were like flings. I went through a lot of relationships. I've had, I used to be a sex addict when I first came out. I attracted to the gay community like metal and a magnet. And I guess I was still, I didn't actually know what love was until I dated someone, I think that lasted a month or so, and which he broke up with me. And I was devastated. And that was, I guess, my first step on becoming a mature person, having my heart broken for the first time, kind of thing. And then, I guess, I mean, like, this year I've tried dating, like, last year I tried dating, like, 10 people, and before that was, like, 4. This year I've only dated, like, tried to date 2 people, but they only lasted 4 weeks, so, yeah, and I'm in the relationship right now that's in the 3rd week, so nothing serious, but, you know, yeah, but, yeah.
I wonder if that whole thing of, you know, when you come out, you just kind of, well, for some people, they just really hit the scene and really seek out a lot of partners. And I mean, that happens both at a young age and also when people come out at an older age. Do you think that's something to do with just kind of these kind of pent up feelings suddenly being allowed to exist?
I think more it's, It could be, but I think my thoughts is, I think people are trying to find themselves in a way. They're trying to find what love is. They're trying to find what type of... The gay community, even though it's small, it's actually big. There's so much variety. Like, there's... the gay community is very, like, in categories, which is, it's quite funny because even though it's so small, we're big enough to actually go against each other. Which someone told me once, saying that when the gay community got their rights to be who they are, these days they, the only thing, these days before the marriage thing went to Parliament, they were fighting against each other because they can't find anything to unify each other with. And so the only thing they could fight is each other. But, I think it's because people are finding myself of themselves. Like for myself, that's how I did it. It's because, well, that's what I think it is. It's because I was trying to find myself, and it was more like I didn't until recently this year. That's when I became properly mature, and I've actually found myself. I know what I want. I know, yeah.
You've mentioned relationships being more than a month, flings being around less than a month. Are there names for things that are kind of less than, you know, like a week?
A quick fuck. no, I think that's a very short fling. But I think a lot of people have a... a lot of people have different ideas what a relationship and fling is. However, it's very close together. That unanimous that there is such thing as flings and relationships there, yeah, but the time difference is a bit different. However, there was this YouTube video saying how to break up with someone, and he said that if you're breaking up with them within the week, it'll be okay to send a text message. If it's over a week, it's okay to give them a call. If it's over a month, you need to do it in person, or you break their heart and you become an arsehole. Yeah.
How are you meeting people? What are the ways of meeting people nowadays?
Big way is NZD, Manhunt, Grindr.
Whoa. Just go back. So NZD is what?
NewZealandDating.com, ManhuntDating.com or .net, I think one of the two. And there's a iPhone, iPod Touch app thing or Android called Grindr, which is the biggest thing ever because it's like the closest person to you and it actually finds you. Doesn't bring up Google Maps, but it goes with Google Maps, like the GPS kind of thing, and it locates the closest person to you, but it doesn't tell you where they are. But yeah, it's closest person, yeah. Also, meeting a lot of people, I've met a lot of people in person through friends, and Facebook helps a lot, especially with the tour, it was Facebook.
So with something like Grindr, you could then, say, like be sitting in the movies or whatever, and it would tell you who's in the room.
Not necessarily, because they would have to have Grindr as well, and you need to have internet to use it. So if their Grindr is on and your Grindr is on, then yes, then it will come up with like saying, this person is 3 meters away or something like that.
And it's free for coffee.
Well, it comes up, well, every profile is different. There's like, some people say NSA, which is no strings attached. It's mainly a hookup site more than anything else, but not really. Some people are actually taken and they're just looking for friends. So, yeah.
So, you've got NSA. What are some of the other little acronyms?
Like for Manhunt, they have a whole list. I can't even remember most of them because it's a big list. Like, but it just practically says every single sexual thing that you can imagine. Like, it has a tick box or everything like that.
So what's the most people you've encountered on Grindr? Like, at what kind of event?
Oh, I haven't actually really went to an event to actually look for Grindr, but however, I want to try one day go to the big gay out and turn on my Grindr to see how many people are so close together. But yeah. But I haven't actually, the most I can actually say is at a family gay bar's birthday. I think there was like 4 people in one room that had their Grindr on at the same time. But yeah.
Coming to the next question on your list of questions that you were actually asking people on the tour, and I'm not sure if it would be a question that I would have ever thought of kind of asking, which was, you know, what's your definition of virginity? And I'm wondering how you came up with that question and kind of the responses, but also what your response would be.
Virginity, everybody has a different opinion on it. Everybody, and it's something about sex. And I think I couldn't go... I felt too uncomfortable to ask him about what type of sex they were into or stuff like that. So the next best thing was to ask them their personal opinion on virginity. And, well, there were so many responses, but everything always started off, every single, interview started off was like, exactly like that. I don't know. I haven't thought about it before. Well, there's 3 that did that. But a lot of reactions were like purity, about being pure. A lot of people saying it's the first time they found love. It's not necessarily a sexual thing. Some people say it's an emotional thing. Some people it's a physical thing. Some people it's a religious thing. I think my favorite answer was, one of them, which is my favorite interview, was, when someone was talking about virginity, how virginity was really something back in the olden days where it was a lot of value to a female when they, because a virgin was a big thing. It was like, and like, especially like no sex before marriage type thing. But, and he thought that virginity doesn't have any value these days, which I disagree because I think my personal opinion in virginity, I think there's not, virginity is hard to define because I think there's more than one definition in virginity. I think there's completely a lot of meanings to virginity. I do agree with the fact that the first time you fall in love, you can lose your virginity. There is the sexual virginity when you first time you had sex. And there's also the random virginities, like the first time I went to a Lady Gaga concert kind of thing. I lost my Gaga virginity. So that's my definition. It's the three definition, my three definitions, random, first time you fall in love, first time you have sex. And it's penetrative sex, not probably, yeah.
And then getting from that question on your list to the next question, which is about being abused. You know, have you been abused in any way, whether it's physical, mental, sexual? How did people respond to that?
Well, I put abuse as the last one because it's the most difficult question throughout the whole thing. A few people had problems with it, but they told it. A couple, like after the interview, there was one in specifically, one broke down in tears straight afterwards, which was fine later, but luckily not during the interview. But a lot of people were okay with answering because they want, because even though they had to tell them, it was more of like, it was the past, it's not happening anymore kind of thing. Yeah.
And how would you answer that question?
For me, I never was really physically abused. I've never really was emotionally abused when it comes to that either. I mean, there was always the people that try to scream out faggot and stuff like that. And I was like, yeah, I am. Well done. Well done. But I never really was abused.
Now at the end of the North Island tour and after doing 47 interviews, which is just amazing.
And three more to come,
so 50 all up. What are your thoughts? I mean, how do you think it went?
I think it went amazing. It was tiring, but amazing. I loved every second of it. I'm glad it's over, but I'm not at the same time, because it was a fun tour, meeting so many people. In fact, I wish I could actually do it again. I probably will do. Just do one big holiday, just travelling all around the North Island. But yeah, that's really my thoughts on it.